Girls.
I'm Sina.
I'm Danielle.
We want to focus on television and movies in particular.
Yes. Disclaimer that we are in no way film experts. A deep, like, dive. Be quiet.
Well,
I'm yelling.
Back me up on this one.
Hey, you're listening to
Two Girls Watch TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Two Girls Watch TV. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Sina.
Do you have seasonal allergies? I don't know why I said it like that.
No,
you,
I just all of a sudden sounded very nasally.
I have been sneezing, blowing my nose, sinus headaches up the wazoo. I think the trees are in bloom outside my window, and I think that the seasonal allergies are hit me hard.
Hitting you hard. Well, it did get really warm, and so like sometimes that dip and rise in like weather can bring out the grossies.
I feel like Kathleen Kelly at the end of You've Got Mail, and I just need Tom Hanks to come and bring me daisies because they're the friendliest flower.
Are you a fan of daisies or just because they're the friendliest flower?
Well, have you ever seen You've Got Mail?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Remember we tried to watch it, but we tried to watch it at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Next birthday, I think it's going to have to be my birthday choice, is You've Got Mail.
I asked you, you were like, no, I just watched it. I got my fix.
It was like the week before my wedding, so that's why I had to watch My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Or if someone's listening to this and writes in a request to watch You've Got Mail, I guess we'll have to watch You've Got Mail. Hint, hint,
guess we'll
wink,
have to
wink.
Watch You've Got Mail.
Nudge, nudge. Just saying, everyone.
I think I got through a solid halfway
point. So she says that, like, her mom said that daisies are the friendliest flower. No. Her mom said twirling something. They love to twirl. Kathleen says that daisies are the friendliest flower. Daisies are nice. I don't think they're my favorite flower, but I know them as the friendliest.
Okay. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
My favorite flower is birds of paradise.
I have no clue what that is.
If you Google it, they're really cool looking.
Are they like the big, like, shh?
They're, you know why I like them? Because they look like a plant and not a flower.
So you don't like flowers, you only like plants?
I guess so. This is so frustrating. I Googled birds of paradise and it gave me snake plants. It's like the internet knows. Like, what are you doing? You can't fucking take
it. Oh, yes, I know exactly. That is the flower that I was trying to describe very poorly. Yes, I know what they are. They look like this. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I like, and for everybody listening, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're cool. They also, they look like birds.
Bards.
Bides.
Bowling anyway. For buzzards.
Bowling. Oh, I caught me off guard. Bowling for buzzards.
There you go. You do it better than I do.
My Pumbaa?
Yeah, your Pumbaa.
A Pumbaa? Anyway, something that has absolutely nothing to do with anything that we've talked about at all, and I have no way to make this stretch.
No.
Is our movie for today.
We're talking about Maestro. I need to ask you a question.
Okay.
When you heard that this movie was about Leonard Bernstein, did you think of a particular John Mulaney joke? Because I did.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Do you know the one
where... I thought it was West Side Story.
Oh.
Which was not in this movie at all.
You got a little bit of... Da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na-na.
Do not insult me with this. Do not insult me. You got a little bit. You got like a note from one of the arguably the greatest musicals of all time. You got a little bar. How dare you? I'm upset.
Okay. Christina's got some things to say about this movie. But the Jungle.
I think this is the first. This is the first movie in a long time that I like as much as I hate. It's crazy. It's crazy how I feel about it. I'm gonna stop using the word crazy, but I just think it's wild. I'll say it's wild how my emotions are just like such polar opposites.
You're conflicted.
I am. I think that's the best way to say it. But anyway, Maestro's on Netflix.
And it is.
I was just talking about this. This is what I wanted to say. I forgot to tell you that I was on a podcast that came out today.
Oh, yeah, I saw. I saw on your Instagram story.
And a decent part of the conversation was about our podcast.
Oh, nice.
So I got to advertise Two Girls Watch TV, and I was on the Fit Like Chris podcast. So if anybody is listening, it's like a really motivational podcast. She also has people that she trains. I'm one of them on the podcast to have conversations. And so we talked about that. So shout out, Chris, if you're listening, thank you again for having me. We had a great time. So we had talked about different types of movies that were, she asked me like what my thoughts were about like the stuff that's coming out, like a predictions. And I was like, I'm interested to see where this movie is going to go in terms of the Oscars. But I made that comment before I watched it.
And now do you have some feelings?
I still think that this stands a chance in some categories.
Yeah.
But remind me of what they are.
Okay. Well, that's a great way to move into this. So let's get into nominations. At the Academy Awards, this is nominated for Best Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Sound, Best Motion Picture of the Year, Best Performance by an Actress in a Lead Role. Carey Mulligan's nominated. Bradley Cooper is nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role. Best Original Screenplay, which I didn't realize, I was going to say John Mulaney. Bradley Cooper wrote the screenplay.
Wrote, starred, and directed.
Yes. Yeah. And then also Best Achievement for Cinematography. At the Golden Globes, this was nominated for, or Bradley Cooper was nominated for Best Performance by a Male Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. He was nominated for Best Director. It was nominated for Best Motion Picture Drama. And Carey Mulligan was nominated for Best Performance by a Female Actor in a Motion Picture Drama.
Drama. Okay. Makeup and Mulligan. Those are my predictions. Official. What is this? What are we doing with these balloons?
Yeah, something's up with Christina Zoom where she just always gets thumbs up and balloons.
When I do two fingers at a time, that's when all the balloons come up. Now they're not coming up.
Of course not. Now they're not. They already did it.
I was really impressed with the makeup.
And Mulligan, Carey Mulligan, got it.
Yeah. And I thought, yeah. So those are, I think, out of everything, I think those two might. Maybe sound. I don't know.
Maybe. Pretty good sound.
All right. Let's go into the summary. The story of the life of Lenny, or Leonard Bernstein. Is it Bernstein or Bernstein?
Bernstein.
Okay. That's what I thought. That's what I said. But I just wanted to double check. Who is a composer, and Felicia Montalegre, who is an actress. The story starts right before they met, when I wrote Leonardo. We're just going to call him Lenny. When Lenny is dating David Oppenheim, not to be confused with Oppenheimer. The story begins around 1946 and spans over approximately 30 years.
So Leonard Bernstein is played by B. Koops. As we said, directorial debut. He wrote it. He started it. He did it all. His wife is Felicia, played by Carey Mulligan, who is a vet on this podcast. She is the star of Promising Young Woman, which we've talked about, and Saltburn, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Felicia and Lenny's daughter is, well, they have three kids, but Jamie is played by Maya Hawke, who is also a vet on this podcast. She is in Stranger Things. I am getting the worst deja vu right now. I've so much deja vu. And you know what the worst thing about deja vu is? I'm sorry to interrupt my... Sorry to interrupt myself, but I need to get this off my chest.
I don't know why that was so funny to me, but it was.
The worst part about deja vu...
Continue interrupting yourself.
Not me interrupting myself so rudely. with my own deja vu. But the worst part about deja vu is at the end of getting deja vu, I get deja vu about saying that I have deja vu. Do you know what I'm saying?
This is very meta.
It's very meta. But like, I am going through the thing. I'm like, oh, this has happened before. Oh, this has happened before. I feel, and then it's like, don't say it, Danielle. Don't say it, Danielle. Don't say it, Danielle. Oh my God, I feel like I'm having deja vu. And then that's the end of the deja vu. Like, it, my deja vu always ends with me having deja vu about saying that I'm having deja vu.
Well, at least you get out of it.
Imagine if, like, I never say that I'm having deja vu and I just move along with my day. I could be in a... You'll just
be forever stuck in it, I guess.
Is that how I go? How I die? I'm just going to be stuck in forever deja vu?
I think so. Ooh.
Stay tuned, everyone. All right. So what was I saying before I so really interrupted myself? Maya Hawke. She is a vet on this podcast. She is on Stranger Things. And then Lenny's sister, Shirley, is played by Sarah Silverman. Okay. So Felicia and Lenny.
There's one more vet.
Oh, who's the other vet?
Michael Urie. Did you talk about him who plays Jerry Robbins?
No, but I know him from Ugly Betty. What do we do with him?
He was also in Love Hard. No.
Oh my God, yes.
No, it wasn't Love Hard. Not Love Hard. It's the one that's like Love Hard.
Oh, crap. It was like Going Away for the Holidays. Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
And, I didn't write it down. And. Shrinking. He was in Shrinking. Single all the way.
Single all the way. That's it.
And he's Brian from Shrinking.
Oh my God, yes. Wow. Okay. Apologies.
All good.
Okay. So, Felicia and Lenny hit a breaking point when Lenny is openly affectionate with his male suitors in front of Felicia in public.
What were you combining words there? What happened?
My brain was reading faster than my mouth was speaking. Okay. So I was reading the word affectionate and I was already on to the word male suitors. I was already thinking about that. So,
okay,
there we go. Felicia pushes him out of her life, but realizes she cannot live without him despite everything he has going on. As they mend their relationship, Felicia finds out that she has cancer, and Lenny drops all of his shows to be with her and their children through it all. Unfortunately, Felicia passes away.
After Felicia passes, there's a moment where Leonard and his three children drive away from the home where they were caring for Felicia, with a sorrow pull-away shot of the passenger seat empty and all three children in the back. Cut to Leo teaching students on how to conduct orchestras. Cut to a dance party break with red lights shining and Lenny dancing with one of the students. We watched him help in the previous scene. We come back to an interview where Lenny says, if Summer is singing, then you can make music. And something along these lines was what Felicia said to him when he was feeling gloomy. Cut to Felicia standing in a blue hue in what looks like to be the other side. And then Maestro appears on the screen.
That dance scene made me so, like, it made me cringe.
I got agita.
Oh, God. I was like, oh, I hate this so much. I hate it so much.
I don't know if it's because it was such a harsh cut or, all right.
I think it was the giant, it was the age difference for me. Like, it was just, like, too big of an age gap between both of those people. And you could tell that Lenny was just, like, going downhill. And it was a train wreck. That's why I got cringy.
And I just feel like, how did we get from that to, like, him being calm, cool, and collected in the interview where he feels like he has, like, I don't know. But I was also trying to figure out, there needs to be something with these colors, right? Because we go from, like, red and spiraling and potentially dangerous situations to, like, a blue, peaceful, other side, otherworldly kind of view. So I can't help but feel like they're playing around with those colors.
Yeah. Well, I think with the movie itself, there's no time. There's no time breaks. Well, there's that. There's no time breaks. There's no like cue cards. Like next week, we are going to talk about past lives and past lives. There's like a clear definition of time and what year we're in.
Yeah. Keep saying past lives though, because I'm going to tell you a little secret. It's just you, me, and the friends. I have been mixing up poor things and past lives for the past 2 weeks. And I just hope that I watch the right movie.
Well, yes. If Emma Stone is in it, both movies are very, very different.
So that doesn't help.
If Emma Stone is in it, you're watching the wrong movie.
The wrong one. Okay.
Yes. If Greta Lee is in the movie, you are watching the correct movie.
Okay.
All right. Past lives, there's a clear distinction of time frame. Here, we don't know, like, okay, this is year 1968. You know it based on the tone of the film. Like, and I do like that they did that. So, like, that really, like, super, super bright 1980s means that, oh, we're in the 1980s.
Yes. And that was like the first low that I wrote down here was that, like, I just wish I had some sort of timeline because it's a long amount of time. It's decades that we're traveling through in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't necessarily mind the story being told in the order that it was told in. I just wish I knew what year we were in.
Yeah.
And I just wish that it was a little bit more explicit so I could figure out like how long they've been good before another quarrel begins, you know?
Yeah,
like,
the timeline is very...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it is very implicit. It's the tone of the film, but then it's also the clothing and the decor. Like, that's all that you have to go off of it.
Yeah, and if you're like, oh, no, I forgot. It'll come back to me. It'll come back at some point.
Okay.
But that's okay. We can... do you want to move into, like... Should we just do highs and lows and then come back to reviews since we're already here?
Sure, why not?
All right.
We're running this thing. We can do whatever we want.
We in charge. Okay. Yeah, so I did like the switch between black and white to color.
Mm-hmm.
Carey Mulligan, it took me like a solid 30 to 45 minutes to realize that this was the same person that we just watched in all of the movies that we discussed that she was in.
Mm-hmm.
She's a chameleon.
Yeah.
And I just think she's fantastic.
I agree. She's super, super talented. And I thought this role was great for her. And what I really liked is I was thinking about, we just saw her in Saltburn. And she had a similar pacing with her dialogue in that role as she did with this one, but it was still just like two completely separate performances.
Yeah, but then you also have Promising Young Woman, and it's like, this is the same person?
Yeah.
This person can talk like this and like that?
Yeah. She has like such great control over her eyes. Like, talk about a twinkling eye. Carey Mulligan's got it.
I think another big low that I had, everything's mixed up here.
Okay.
So when Lenny says he gets deeply depressed, like, it's, I think it's like there's a scene right when it turns to color. I really don't have a lot to go off of that proves this. He just says it. And I just feel like this, like, I don't see him, like, drinking a lot. I don't see him, like, feeling sorrowful that he can't be with a man versus a woman. Like, I don't see any sort of thing based on his, I'm saying these things specifically because they're based on his life,
mm-hmm.
of things that he's, like, had quarrels about in the past. Quarrels is going to be the word of this podcast because that's the second time I've said it. But I just feel like there was nothing really there to tell me that he was depressed. I just thought that, like me, sometimes he loves to be stressed the fuck out.
Excuse me. So in terms of his depression, I do think that he is a depressed person, especially if he's saying that he is depressed. And when he was confiding in Felicia about his father, and, you know, that feeling of being not accepted by what he does and then also keeping this major secret from the public, I think that his type of depression is an incredibly high functioning one, where he, to mask the depression, he's going to make a joke. He's going to make a joke. He's going to flirt with someone. He's going to do cocaine, and he's going to, like, you know, pile on his workload, and he's going to form these connections with these people that he, you know, in some cases he can keep, in some cases he cannot.
Yeah. And I mean, and that brings up one of the arguments that they've had about how she's like, all I know is you're like, I'm with a, I love a person who's never going to be able to love himself. And it's like this whole like self-hate kind of function that he's kind of just like in and unable to get out of that maze kind of thing.
Yeah. So that's how I read his depression. You see it in the cracks, but for the most part, it's all a farce.
Okay. I'm trying to think of other highs. I really, so the costumes, at least for Felicia, were on point. That blue dress when she walks out of the, when Lenny is receiving recognition for a piece and she's in that like darker blue gown.
With the chiffon sleeves?
Yeah.
Yeah, now she's walking away. You see those chiffon sleeves flutter? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And when she first catches him having relations with a man, she's in that almost like a pearl blue at the knee. And then she has like the matching shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then cut to another scene when I think it's the next day when she like puts his stuff in the next room. She's in that green turtleneck dress with all those thick pearls.
Yeah.
I just, whoever did her costumes, they were.
I think the costumes across the board were really, really good. Mm. And I think that Lenny's costumes were really, really good.
Mm.
He was doing an interview and he's wearing cream pants, a cream turtleneck, and then a cardigan over it with like a cream base and then like a little bit more of embroidery. And I loved that outfit, number one. Number two, when I saw it, it reminded me of, I used to read the website Man Repeller back in the day, and one of the writers, Harling Ross, she wrote about stick of butter dressing. And when I saw that, that was stick of butter dressing.
I thought you were going to say it gave you Coastal Grandma vibes.
I mean, it was definitely Coastal Grandma as well, but like, the term stick of butter dressing has just stuck in my mind. Also, like, I cannot pull off stick of butter dressing because it's just like not in my, it's not in my wheelhouse for my coloring, but I love the idea of it. And once you hear that term, you can't unhear it. So that's what I thought of.
I won't be able to unhear it.
Thank you. So when you see someone dressed all in creams and whites and light yellows, you will know stick of butter dressing. I thought that there were some really, really great transitions, especially in the beginning. Like you, when you see Lenny and Felicia running from like scene to scene and they like run away from the table and then they're running into the theater. I thought that those were so smooth. They were so pleasant to watch. I really, really loved the punchy dialogue between Lenny and Felicia. That's what made me like them even more, like even more as a couple, because you could tell that they had that connection and that they just spoke the same language, basically.
I'm thinking maybe screenplay, maybe a good contender too, because some of the dialogue in here was really, really good. I mean, there were a bunch of phrases. I didn't write down all of them, but I think it's the one scene where she's sitting down, Felicia's sitting down with her friend, Sarah Silverman?
That's Lenny's sister.
Okay, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember if it was an in-law or a friend. And she's talking about her potential love interest, but the fact that he is a gay man and wants to, her to introduce him to this other gay man. And she goes, there I was sitting, blushing, butterflies all a tremble.
Yeah.
Blushing butterflies all a tremble. It's like, it's just so, I don't know. It's just really good. I don't know if it's because there's an alliteration that kind of got snuck in there, but it's really good.
I agree. I think that it has the dialogue of like an old black and white film. And I really like that, but not something like, I think of It's a Wonderful Life, when I think about like an old town, especially what we've talked about on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, beautiful old building and loan. It has a similar vibe to that, which makes sense because in the beginning of the movie, it starts in the 40s. But right. I just thought that the way that Lenny and Felicia communicated was so good. I loved the scene after she was diagnosed with cancer. They go for a walk in the park and they're sitting back to back and they're saying, you know, guess what number I'm thinking of? And it's a call back to them when they like first started dating and they were in the park and doing that. So I loved that continuation and I loved them as a couple.
I did too. This is more of a personal observation, but it is more of a high. I've never seen smoking look so cool,
right?
And then abruptly look so pathetic all in the same movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like they were doing it because it was cool and it was the thing to do and everything was and so I looked this up because it's quite clear, as we know, that she had breast cancer and that it was the breast cancer was hiding lung cancer because she never got better. The doctor was like, you'll be up and at him in like 2 weeks. And then like that never happened. So she's clearly like, it's getting worse and then something's happening. And so I was like, when did we realize cigarettes were bad for us?
I mean, okay. You know what? Continue with your dive into cigarettes bad.
Well, it was by 1964, it was official. This is according to lung.org, 10 health effects caused by smoking you didn't know about. And this is like in the beginning of the article. By 1964, it was official. The U.S. Surgeon General confirmed that cigarette smoking causes lung cancer. But in the 50 plus years that followed, we learned that smoking is responsible for many awful diseases, contributing to 480,000 lives lost to tobacco we face today. So I think it might have been, again, I don't know what time we're in.
Yeah.
So I don't, are we assuming that like color TV was like when?
Like I know that right off the top of my head.
I know, right.
How does color TV and tobacco?
Well, because this happened once we were in color, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't know if I should use that as my gauge of like, because my thing was like, did we, like the doctor never told her to stop fucking smoking.
Yeah, I know.
And then
but
the cutscene to them in the park where they're smoking.
I mean, if you think about it, the idea of smoking is something that only in recent years has been widely known as a bad thing. Like when we were younger, there were smoking and non-smoking sections. How long did it take for people to not like no longer be allowed to smoke indoors?
I think it's different depending on where you live, but I mean, I remember being like a baby and seeing commercials about like how it's so bad for you, the guy with the thing in his throat, but
yeah, but it took, okay. If the Surgeon General, I'm sorry, what was the year that the Surgeon General said that cigarettes were bad?
I think it was 1964.
Okay, 1964, yes. The Surgeon General said, hey, stop smoking, it causes cancer. Okay. And then in our lifetime, that was what, like 1997, let's say, they are still smoking indoors, outdoors. I mean, it's just,
I'm thinking that there was a lot of speculation behind it because I just looked up that RCA devised the first complete, this is from SRI.com, color television, SRI International. By 1953, RCA devised the first complete electronic color TV system. So I'm thinking that if we base it on the fact that there's color television, this whole rigmarole of like, is smoking bad or not, probably didn't happen, or it's just starting to like surface depending on where we are. So I'm thinking that like, maybe they just didn't know better.
I mean, I also think that they were probably just addicted to it.
Right. But like if a doctor says,
yeah, but it still an addiction. I mean, you know, people can tell you to stop drinking. That doesn't mean that they stop drinking.
Like, that conversation just didn't happen. So like, that's why I'm like, in my head, I'm like, why wouldn't the doctor at least warn her that this is a bad idea?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even get that. So I'm thinking that, like, again, this is where I'm just saying, like, this is where a timeline could be helpful with this particular piece. But it's crazy to me how, like, the smoking thing looked so cool in the beginning. And then it just, it's almost like it flipped and it became like this thing or this bad habit that they're just clinging to at this point. Mm. But it wasn't that vibe in the beginning.
Mm.
And so that dramatic shift, I don't really think I've ever seen that in a movie. And I don't think that you can say, not you, I'm saying in general, I don't think anybody can say that it's a minor piece of this film, because there are cigarettes in every single scene.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, I also think that was the time everyone smoked. You could smoke on planes.
It's like, it's almost like a statement piece accessory that is a part of this movie. Is the best way that I could, like, describe it. It's like super prominent. It's not necessarily directly part of the plot, but it eventually becomes a big factor.
Mm. Gotcha.
And then I'm going to say this low. Oh no, where did my notes go? What happened here? Okay, well, my screen just went black, but
that's not good.
What I was gonna say
can you still see me?
No, I can see you. It's just like I clicked on my notes and they just went away. Here it is.
So just to continue with the 1965 Surgeon General says smoking is bad. In the US, in 1988, airlines based in the United States banned smoking on domestic flights. So up until 1988, you were allowed to smoke on a flight.
Well, yeah, Danielle, it's big tobacco. They were like, we know it's bad, but like, let's keep it on the down low.
Yeah, but between 1964 and 1988. So, you know, it's okay. Anyway, moving on from cigarettes.
Okay. Lenny comes in and the daughter sees him and he's like talking about a possible love interest or whatever. Or Lenny comes in with his possible love interest to their home and the daughter like sees him. And then you hear like the little West Side Story music in the background. I liked that piece, but it wasn't enough. And it leads me to say this next part. This was very much a part of his private life, but I think having his successes prevalent here would really knock this out of the park.
Yeah.
Like the combination of those two, I think, would really knock it out of the park.
I agree. I think
just don't understand how you just casually I think I equated it to how do we do the movie equivalent of just scrolling past West Side Story? That's what I wrote in my notes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. After I didn't know much about Leonard Bernstein, but then leaving this movie, I still don't think I know much about Leonard Bernstein. Like, I know that he's a conductor, a maestro, but I don't know about any of his big accomplishments because it seems like they were really just glazed over and the focus was really on him, the person, and his relationship with Felicia.
Yeah. And it's a shame because the dialogue part of the writing is so good.
Yeah. One low that I have that I don't know why this bothered me, but it did. Like the scene when they're packing up the family to leave Fairfield to go back to the city. Mm-hmm. And first of all, they put the dog in the crowded trunk, which I don't understand why he couldn't go in the middle. He should have been in the middle. But I get that the point of this was that they're like taking all their memories, but they're leaving like the front seat open for Felicia and they're just moving on with their life. But I don't know. It felt like a long-winded scene, especially after seeing like Bradley Cooper and, or Felicia and Lenny like embracing each other. And you know that it's like starting to be the end there. I don't know why to wrap up like the family coping with the loss of her. It was that scene. I didn't necessarily like it in a way.
The scene in the car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it.
Well, I think that they're trying, it seems to me like they're indirectly trying to say that this is what happened, because there's the scene where one of the kids runs out and then Lenny runs after the kid and the kid jumps in his arms and then they all kind of like have this embrace. And then right after that scene is this scene in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it just seemed like they were trying to drive that home without actually showing her die, yeah, because her character was like this, like, mostly innocent person that was just kind of like stuck in his whirlwind.
Yeah, no, I get that. I just think that there's a way to do implicit well, and I feel like this just relied too much on implicit that we didn't get to see anything, any plot of the real storyline.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
That's how I felt.
I get it. Makes sense.
Did you have
anything else here?
No, I was going to ask if you wanted to go into Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb.
The only other thing that I want to add is I looked up a little bit about his prosthetic nose. Did you hear about this?
Well, I heard the Joe Coy joke, him saying that it looked like a penis. I didn't think that it looked like a penis.
I didn't think so either, but I forgot that it was there. And then I looked at him and I was like, that's not his nose. And so I looked at it and I think it was this one. Bernstein children on Bradley Cooper nose backlash. Troller's gonna troll. Jamie Bernstein says that the complaints about Bradley Cooper's prosthetic nose in Maestro are a big pile of nonsense. When the trailer for Maestro was first unveiled back in August, it was met with something of backlash from viewers arguing that the large prosthetic nose worn by Bradley Cooper to play Leonard Bernstein perpetuated anti-Semitic stereotypes. Shortly after the complaints, Bernstein's family members put a statement out defending Cooper's choice. Said it breaks our hearts to see any misrepresentations or misunderstandings of his efforts. Anyway, I think Bradley Cooper also backed it up. I don't remember. I think this was a different article. This one is from radiotimes.com. But I think I read another article that was based in the Rolling Stone. I think it was Rolling Stone. And like Leonard's voice was nasally. Mm-hmm. And I think that the prosthetic nose was helping him kind of like capture that voice.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
So wait, did he wear a prosthetic nose throughout the movie? Because I felt like it was only towards the end of the movie that he looked different. I didn't think that he was wearing it the whole time. It looked like Bradley Cooper's nose.
I don't know.
Unless I'm really bad at remembering what Bradley Cooper's nose looks like, but it didn't look really any different to me.
I would have to look into that while we continue with our scenes and get back to you, because that part I actually don't know.
Okay. It's okay. You don't have to look into it, but I didn't, if it is a prosthetic nose and I'm thinking that it doesn't look like a prosthetic nose, I don't know what all the hoopla is about. That's the point I'm trying to make here.
Okay.
It's definitely a prosthetic nose towards the end, but in the beginning and then throughout the movie, at him being like, you know, an adult, not an old man, if it is a prosthetic nose, but it doesn't look like one, I don't see what the big hullabaloo is all about.
The hullabaloo.
Yeah, I had to come up with something else besides hoopla. I already used my good word, so I got hullabaloo. All right, what did IMDb rate this?
IMDb, 6.6 out of 10. Metacritic, the Metascore was a 77, and the user score was a 5.9.
On Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave this a 79%, but the audience gave it a 58%.
So I found this review. It's too long. I'm just going to read a part of it.
Okay.
And it's right around where this is. It's a 6 out of 10. And a lot of people were saying a lot of the same stuff on IMDb. But it's titled, I watched too many of this kind of story and Maestro isn't an inch different. A struggling musician agonized by his own genius, talents, and creativity, trapped in a loveless marriage filled with guilt, which I don't agree with, because I really do believe that Felicia loved him and poured all of her love into him. So I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Both look the other way while one has an affair and realize the importance of one's own partner too late. Right now at the top of my head, I can think of Boss and Verdon, A Star Is Born, George and Tammy, Walk the Line, Dream Girls, Daisy Jones and the Six, etc. Wow, that's a lot. Biographical genre is especially tricky because it has to excel the life of actual historical figures. Maestro could have been much better if it delved into the introspective and artistic side of Bernstein deeper or provided a different, fresh point of view on his life rather than reciting his personal life. His autobiography or research would be more fun and interesting than this explanatory movie. I'm going to stop there. There's a couple more paragraphs, but I just, that's pretty much what I was looking at.
Didn't Bradley Cooper take like 5 years or something to learn how to play this guy and like studied him constantly?
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I didn't think his performance was bad. I don't want to say that. I don't think
it was either. I mean, I think
I thought it was really good.
Bradley Cooper is a fantastic actor, and really this was no different.
I just wish I got to see more of Bernstein. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think in terms of Bradley Cooper, talents, acting, you know, he's perfected that at this point. He is an incredible actor and he deserves all the accolades. Direction, I think he did a really good job with direction. Screenplay, I think that's the problem. I think the dialogue is good. The plot is the problem.
Mm.
So I grabbed a 2 out of 5 star review. It was cacophonous, disjointed, episodic, not in a good way. Did you like? I had to go into Google and look up how to say the word cacophonous. Disjointed, episodic, not in a good way, all over the place, and forgot to tell the story of what exactly it was that made Leonard Bernstein a staggering genius of the 20th century music. Carrie Mulligan was splendid. 1 star for her and 1 star for the occasional great scene. Was short, sweet, but I do agree. I think that you watch this movie and you forget that like we're talking about a person who's composing music.
Yeah, because it just happens so like seldom.
Yeah, it takes a back, you know, that's on the back burner. It seems to be the partying, the family, the tension, that all is front and center. And then behind, oh, dad's got to go write this this piece of music real quick, be right back.
And I mean, it would have been nice to kind of see like how his personal life maybe impacted his music or his work or his relations at work. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that might have been like the piece that kind of connects it, but I don't want to beat a dead horse here. You know, we've been harping on it. You get it, friends, right?
Yeah, you guys get it. Okay. What'd you have to eat?
I didn't. I had coffee because it was late and I needed a pick me up. But I also had a blueberry lemonade seltzer.
Ooh.
And that was really good.
Trader Joe's?
I think we got it at ShopRite. I don't remember the brand, though.
Ooh, that sounds good, though. Love a seltzy.
But I wish I had a glass of, like, red wine or champagne because this just kind of gives off the vibe of, like, a cross between, like, cozy and celebratory.
You know, I don't know why, but I really want a glass of champagne. Like, I've just been craving a glass of champagne.
Do it for no reason.
Okay. Sounds great. I did not eat while watching this either. I had a cup of mint tea.
Ooh.
And it was nice. It was, you know, just something warm, especially like the second half of this movie where Felicia's dying of cancer. You just need something warm to make you cozy while you're watching something really sad.
It was brutal. My face was just permanently wet for like the second half of the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. But I definitely wasn't, you know, expecting that, but I'll tell you this. I saw like the first scene and my immediate expectation was this is going to be painfully slow. Mm. I don't think that it was painfully slow.
No.
But I can't really put my finger on the pacing here is the best way that I could frame this. Because it's not like a formula. It's not a I didn't feel like there was anything like formulaic about it or there was any sort of pattern to it. I really didn't have anything to go off of there.
Yeah.
I just kind of had to buckle up.
I was also expecting it to be painfully slow. But I think that Killers of the Flower Moon actually takes that this Oscar season as painfully slow. I didn't think this was about Leonard Bernstein. I mean, I knew that it was about like a conductor, but I thought it was about like a 1930s conductor, like not now I sound like a 1930s train conductor. Like I thought it was like a maestro in like, we were only going to stay in 1930s. And I think that I solely thought that because the previews were all in black and white and my brain went Mank. Do you remember Mank?
Same. Okay. Same. Yeah. Same. Also both Netflix are geez. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah. 100%. I thought we were just going to be black and white. I thought it was going to be Mank part two. Like I thought that that was where we were going to go with this.
I was just going to say that.
That's what I thought.
It's a fair point. Yeah, I also thought that it was going to be mainly more about him and not. This has the title of Mank, but it gives Foss and Verdon vibes.
They're both MAs. Both
in it.
Well, yeah. It's both. They both start with MA too. Like your brain just immediately starts thinking like Mank, Maestro, Black and White, so on and so forth. Gary Oldman, right, Bradley Cooper.
I'm saying like they're both in it in terms of like they have equal parts in this, like Foss and Verdon. Verdon? Yeah, Verdon. Yeah.
It should have been called Bernstein.
No, I think it should have had both other names in it.
Lenny and Felicia?
I don't know. But you see what I'm saying? It's like they're both equally a part of it, but it seems like it's only gonna be the life of like one person, not the life of a relationship.
Yeah.
Which it really was.
Yeah. I agree.
Did you have an IRL moment?
Okay. If I've said this on this podcast or you've heard me say it, I'm going to say it again. I will not feel fulfilled in my life until I hold a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I want to be the balloon wrangler in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
We can do that.
It is my biggest wish. It's like you need to know the CEO of Macy's in order to be able to be in that goddamn parade. No, or the Backstreet Boys. It's complicated. It is very complicated.
we'll make it happen. We'll put it on our bucket list.
Okay. So
also that scene is just so funny. They're like in the middle of this like horrific fight and then you just see Snoopy coming by the window.
Also, it starts with him coming in like, who's abandoned Snoopy in the vestibule here?
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I need one more plea. If anyone is listening to this podcast and you work for Macy's and you know how to get me to be a balloon wrangler, I will hold the balloons with the best of them. I will be there at 3:30 on Thanksgiving Eve. I will wait. You let me know and I will be there. I will diaper up and be ready to go.
I will diaper up. It's not like New Year's Eve.
You know what? Whatever you need from me.
I had an IRL moment for you, and it was just that Thanksgiving house scene. That house is your future
IRL. Oh, my. Okay. We've talked about the clothes. We've talked about the makeup. The set design.
Yeah.
Felicia has fantastic style. Like, oh my God, I want every single interior in every single house or every single scene.
The wallpapers and the drapes in that home, that Thanksgiving scene. I was like, oh, this has Danielle written all over it.
It does. It really does. Oh, wow. Wow, 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 wow. Thank you. I'm so happy that when you see something like that, you think of me.
Oh, anytime. And that's it.
We did it all.
We did it all. We did it out of order, but we did it all.
Yeah, you know.
So, next week, past
lives. Not past things. Not poor lives.
Poor lives. coming. Okay, I'm just letting you know it's coming. So if you'd like to write in a review, you are welcome to, you can DM us on Instagram and Twitter at Hey It's Two Girls. I'm on Instagram at Classic Sina. Danielle's on Instagram at Danielle Kobianki. You can send us suggestions. You can write in reviews at twogirlswatchtv@gmail.com. Two is spelled out T-W-O. The YouTube channel is Two Girls Drink Beer. And as always, thank you for listening. Like, rate, subscribe, all those good things. And we'll catch you next week, friends.
Bye.